So, good evening. This is our 21st chapter, only two more to go, of our book, Letting Go. And this chapter is entitled Keiko and Shugyo, because we just had the Shugyo Tase Kigan Shiki seminar last weekend in Hilo, and because, you know, I knew this was coming up before the seminar, we've done a lot of work with Shugyo lately. And trying to help define the difference between Keiko and Shugyo. This is very difficult to do in words because Keiko practice is all practice, self-development practice in the relative world. Everything that we do in the relative world to improve our lot, whatever you can think of in terms of education and business and relationship and physical improvement, all the way down to how you cut your hair and how you wear your clothes, and everything is keiko. That's what keiko means. It's your sort of, it's the thing that you do to get ahead in whatever practice you're doing, whatever it is in your life, whatever your life is made of. Shugyo, on the other hand, is much more difficult to define because as soon as you put it in words, that's not quite it. We can say, well, Shugyo is like being present in awareness in the moment. That's the practice. We know this is the practice of being present in awareness in the moment. You know, but there's levels and levels and levels of this. So attempting to, I mean, this is a very general sort of statement. So attempting to define it or pin it down is very difficult. And we have different kinds of practices. And when we look at those different practices, in Aikido, sometimes that helps us understand the even though the keiko aspect of each practice is quite different, maybe the common denominator is Shugyo. So no matter what practice we're doing, no matter what keiko we're practicing in our daily life, no matter where we are, how old we are, what we look like, how wealthy we are, how educated we are, no matter any of that stuff, everyone can always be practicing Shugyo all the time. So it's possible to practice Keiko without Shugyo, but I don't see how it could be possible to practice Shugyo without Keiko, because Keiko is everything that we're always doing. So it's always present. Shugyo is keeping one point or not. It's the one choice we actually have, because the process that we go through in developing ourselves through Keiko is a conditioned response mechanism. It's from our previous conditioning that those choices are made, so in a sense, they're not choices. In a sense, it's just a conditioned response to a given set of circumstances. Whereas, to practice Shugyo, you have to consciously keep on point. You have to consciously choose to be present and aware in any situation. And one other thing about that, as I read from this chapter, and as you know, it's a very, very long chapter, and I'm going to read a very select, you know, three or four pages is it, out of maybe 25 pages. Because there are many subjects covered in this chapter, but they're pretty much all of my efforts to try to get a better hold on a sort of understanding of Shugyo, or an expression of this understanding of Shugyo. And so some of the things that are said in here, as I read it through, this is written 5-6 years ago, I probably wouldn't say it quite this way today, but try to understand that I'm trying to express the inexpressible. And sometimes some I notice some examples I give as this is Keiko and this is Shugyo. The Shugyo is really just a very, very advanced stage of Keiko. But it also, it can't take place without Shugyo. So in a sense, I'm trying to use really Keiko, to very advanced Keiko, to show what kind of state of mind you have to be in order to be practicing Shugyo. Does that make sense? Okay. All right, so I'll read a little bit here. Let me put my glasses on. This is page 255. Keiko and Shugyo. In the Japanese language, there are two words which mean training. They are Keiko and Shugyo. Keiko means following literally the rules of the physical training. If you were asked to pick up the sensei at his house at 5 o'clock, then Keiko training would be to arrive at 5 o'clock. This is simply following instructions. On the other hand, the Shugyo approach might be to take into account the possibility of some unforeseen delay and so arrive 15 minutes early at 4:45. No matter what you do, how you approach your life practice as Keiko or Shugyo dictates the outcome. We say, Shinpo Uchure Kan no Soku Genjo. How you treat this life is how this life treats you. How you see it is how it will be. Though this doesn't necessarily mean saying with your words only, and not necessarily by your actions, though words and actions are important, and not even necessarily by what you think, although thinking is important. Thinking, speaking, and acting all reflect something deeper. It is your actual state of being that is behind those three things that is important. So what this training that you do brings to you depends upon how you treat it. Will your approach be Keiko, or will it be Shugyo? In other words, will it improve your technique only, or will you become a better human being? That is the real meaning of the difference between Keiko and Shugyo. It's up to you. So how you treat your life actions is essential. For instance, we say we begin an Aikido class at 2:30. Will we be on the mat at 2:30? That is not wrong. But how much better to be on the mat at least 10 or 15 minutes before 2:30 so you are ready to train? And 5 minutes before the teacher steps on the mat, you should be sitting together silently waiting. In this way, you prepare your mind-body condition properly so that when the teacher arrives, you are optimally ready. Most people's habit will not necessarily be like this. And of course, changing this or any other habit will have to be a conscious decision in the beginning. Then later on, when this becomes your normal approach to your responsibilities, life itself becomes different for you. Your life can be humdrum and common, or your life can be fascinating, luminous, and sacred. It's up to you. Every moment is how you treat that moment. If you want your training to be on the deepest level, if you want to transform your life, if you want to develop yourself in any kind of real way, then you must treat the training in that way. If you take the training for granted, or you are just almost there, then you will be just that. Everything you do, no matter what you do, treat it with the greatest respect. In that way, you treat yourself with respect. You will be amazed how much confidence you have automatically in everything you do. Now, you may think that that business of being on the mat and ready to train sounds like a rule. We can say, if you do this just because it's a rule, that's good for a start, but that's Keiko. Keiko is better than no Keiko, but it won't be Shugyo, real training, unless you do it for the right reason. Don't just do it because I told you. You must do it for yourself, because you recognize what I'm telling you. In other words, I'm telling you this for you to make a decision for yourself. I'm not telling you this just to make a new rule for you. If you learn to treat the universe in this way, you'll see that it is always treating you like this. You will notice the universe treats you as if what you are engaged in is significant. This is not something necessarily religious, but something simply true that has real meaning and value for you. So then your life has value. I'm going over to page 263, Changing Thinking. Before you pick up the bokken, how you think about that bokken is very important. I hope you don't think it's just a piece of wood carved to look like a sword. It is much more than that. It is an extension of our very mind. This wooden sword is matter. How matter interacts with you depends entirely upon you. It has nothing to do with the matter itself as separate from you, but everything to do with your perspective, your attitude towards it. You know that is why, if I keep one point, you cannot lift me. But if I don't, you can. The difference is perspective. I don't weigh more. You cannot cause this matter that makes up this body to weigh more, at least not instantly. Just changing the way I think changes the nature of my relationship with this matter. This is done by what we call mentally maintaining stability. We may also say extending ki. When we practice Boken, we are practicing extending our sense of presence throughout the Boken. In this way, the one point and the tip of the Boken are one, not separate. If you think that this is just a piece of wood that you pick up and swing, and that it is separate from you, this practice has no meaning. So even if you are a beginner, and you never have cut with a wooden sword before in your life, if you treat it like it is a life and death event, then even if your technique is immature, your cutting will be okay. What matters is what you are expressing when you do something. How deep do you go? This is the question. When you cut, you must be expressing your roots, your soul, your source, your original condition. If you practice that way, then you can have the experience from the beginning. This expression opens more and more as we practice within each of us. The more effective you get at the technique, the more you are able to do that. On the other hand, you can be very experienced at cutting and not let go of your attachment to that, then there will be no real cutting. Kamae and Kime. Through the years, first Tohei Sensei, then Suzuki Sensei developed 10 suburi for Boken. Suburi means repetitive cutting with the Boken. We begin with the first of those, the Kamae, or the positions. Then second we do Kirikata, which is simple repetitive cutting in each different position. And then we do the 8 suburi where we bring these positions and these cuts together in different combinations and practice them with rhythm and counting. Excuse me. Even though we say that kime means the point of cutting, or the point where the physical movement ceases, the mind must freely continue, or this is not truly kime. The word seishi means when you have finished your technique, you continue to extend ki with calmness. But you also must know that seishi continues at all times, not just at that moment of completion. Even as you are standing or sitting listening to me, you must be experiencing seishi. In exactly the same way, every time you pick up the Boken, you must be continually experiencing Kime. Of course, it is at some specific point that Kime strongly manifests, but if this is not present in you when you pick up the Boken, then it will not be able to manifest when you cut. So even though when we do our Kamae, the positions, there is no cutting, still we must be continually demonstrating Kime. So, we are so used to taking the smallness of our life for granted. It seems almost embarrassing to us to act with such kime, with such seishi. How can I be so big, you may say. To be complete, you must give yourself up. We say, let go. In this way, the kime is flowing through you very powerfully at all times. Never hesitate. The key to living life completely is commitment, plain and simple. Many years ago, I said to Suzuki Sensei, I want to be like you. He said, breathe 1 hour a day, every day, for the rest of your life. Otherwise, don't come asking me to teach you. This is commitment. Of course, at the time, I had no idea what I was asking. I'm very grateful now, but at the time, I didn't know what I was getting myself into. This is Kokyu. This is the life force. This is integrative quality that pulls everything together for you. Okay, short more on page 266. So here you have this opportunity to truly live this life. And I say you have this opportunity while others don't. Why? Somehow, when you were born, or perhaps even before you were born, you made a deep promise. Deep inside you, someone made a promise. That's why you are here now. If you don't fulfill that promise and you die, then look out. You must be true to yourself. Everyone in this work knows exactly what I'm talking about, somewhere within them, everyone. You may still be a bit confused about what matters, but please be encouraged to continue. Okay, so that's all I chose to read tonight, although there's more and more and more, of course. But it goes on. I'm sure you've read it yourself. So I don't know if it was obvious what I started saying before I read about how the chapter is sort of pointing to true value, and I talk about true value in Kokyu and Kime and Seishi and the life force and so forth, and these are all phenomenon that are intimately related to shugyo practice and don't arise out of Keiko. But I told that story. I didn't read that part, but I told the story about the young person in Japan that Toi Sensei was very unhappy with our cutting. We were cutting bokken, and that some young girl was watching. And he had her come up, and he showed her how to cut, and she cut, and he said, "There, that's kokyu." Well, she never breathed. She never meditated. She had no training at all. But she had an experience of shugyo right then. Of course, with Toi Sensei's great assistance, it could happen. He led her right to it, and she just did it. And he said, "There, that's what you guys are all missing. You guys are all cutting from your expertise. That's Keiko, a high level of development, Keiko. But you're forgetting that there's no other moment but this moment. And when you cut, it has to be everything." And so, this really, really embedded itself in my psyche, because I really respected Toi Sensei. I've always been really intrigued by that which is hidden. I like to read mysteries, even mystery novels. Some of them, of course, I like the best, the most sophisticated ones I can find, because I like to have the mystery hidden. The deeper, the better. When I think about it anyway, my interest in this training is because it's so mysteriously hidden. And it's like, a murder mystery times a million. It's a lifetime of looking, inquiring, looking deeply into the nature of why we are the way we are, why we do what we do. What is it down underneath all of it that makes it all happen? And what is deeper than the judgment of good and bad? What is deeper than the judgment of experienced and inexperienced, of all these qualities that we're constantly demanding of each other and putting each other down for not having and putting each other up for having? And all this nonsense that causes all the strife and suffering in the world. What is underneath all that? And this is what attracted me so much to Tohei Sensei's teaching. And even though sometimes he didn't express it very directly, if you saw Tohei Sensei moving and speaking, and then you knew he was experiencing it. You knew that he was having a very deep experience of this phenomenon that's this unknown. This thing we can't quite put our finger on. And so the practice, the more we practice this teaching that he's given us, it naturally brings us more and more into contact with this deeper, 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 deeper nature. And shugyo is the nature of that kind of practice. Of course, everybody does keiko. Please continue to do keiko and improve yourself in every single way. There's no suggested negativity about that. But from your very first day in the dojo, don't forget, this is really about something much more, much deeper, much more hidden, much more mysterious. And if you can't figure it out, that's fine. We're not here to figure it out. We're here to experience it, which is completely different than coming to some intellectual conclusion about it. Okay? So please, if you have any questions, I'm sure you do, Jeff has the recorder.
Thank you, Sensei. First of all, I would like to just comment that it's always inspirational to read about the training, and I have a notion always, it's inspirational about vanquishing lethargy and inertia, you know, and yes, I'm going to get up at 4 a.m. and breathe for an hour, yes, and it doesn't always happen. At the same time, I thought, well, I show up, I still come here, you know, it's like, give myself a break, okay? But my question was, is I'm first of all, I have to plead some ignorance because I feel like I should know what Seishi is, be able to stand up and define that in front of a group of strangers at my level. But I don't know. And I noticed when you were reading this passage, you said you may not write the same way that you did 6 years ago or interpret it. But you, instead of saying demonstrating Seishi, you said experiencing. And you did it twice in that same paragraph. So I thought this wasn't a mistake. I expect that you intentionally said experiencing. So if you could please elaborate more on Seishi and the difference between demonstrating and experiencing it.
Okay, thank you. Yes, you're right. I did do that on purpose, and it's corrected in the book and read, and in the new electronic edition that comes out, it will be corrected. It's not that demonstrating is wrong, but demonstrating indicates a kind of subject-object, person watching someone else do something. And I'm not so concerned with you being able to show others that you are, show others Seishi in your condition. I'm much more concerned that you experience Seishi. So I changed that word from demonstrating to experiencing. Makes it more close to your own world of experience, which is what you experience. In your life is what your life is. It's not doing something for the sake of what somebody else says, but doing it for the experience itself. That's what I've been encouraging, right? Seishi, you haven't. I'm sure you've heard it before. Maybe you're not clear exactly what it means. Toi Sensei likes to use that phrase when we're doing a technique, for instance, Shomenichi Kokunage, and we take the person down and shoot. And then there's a moment, we don't call it a pause, but there is a fulfilling of the movement. In other words, when we make a movement, it goes to infinity. It continues infinitely. And so we allow that experience to express itself. There's no one can say how long that lasts. It certainly isn't very long. But it's not just a matter of pausing at the end of the technique. It's not that at all. So I would never express it that way. And I'm not sure what the Japanese word means, seishi. But anyway, what it literally means as a word has no bearing on what the way we're using it in Aikido anyway. Often Toi Sensei takes words out of context and brings them into Aikido and gives them a new definition. And this may very well be one of those or not, I don't know. But, you know, Seishi is the experience of infinite Kakudaiho. The experience of infinite Shuchuho. This is Seishi. So, yeah, you can see that it's not something that just happens at the end of a technique, even though we might use it that way. And I drew a parallel with kime that we use in a similar way that happens at the end of a cut. But if the kime isn't there already, if that kime isn't in you and moving and acting and being experienced, then it will never be there at the end of the cut. It's not something you can produce. It's a condition of mind. So seishi is also this condition of experiencing, or condition of mind. Mind and experience, basically the same thing. Does that help?
Yes, it does. It just occurred to me to wonder. I wondered, can one experience it without, I guess it's sort of hand in hand with, unless you practice it, you cannot experience it. But it's something that is, what I got from it is like, it's like almost something that is outside, or a condition of the universe that you experience through practice, and that if you experience it, then you can demonstrate it.
But are they interrelated? What do you mean by outside?
Well, I mean, it's like it's a force that exists. There's the key, I guess it's an aspect of key, that which of awareness, or you know, the source consciousness, something like that. It's like an experience of.
Are you trying to figure out what this thing is?
No, I'm just trying to, what I thought was like the difference between demonstrating and experiencing is that had it shifted that it's something you, if you train long enough, then you're receptive to it.
I'll go that far with you. In order to experience it, you have to practice it. As far as your attempt to define it as having to do with ki or something in the universe or something outside or something over there or something in here, or all that stuff is beside the point. Those distinctions are irrelevant to actual practice. They might be okay in theory, but in practice, they're useless. Practice is just practice. So if you want to experience seishi, just practice. Half, half, half. This is seishi.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Fincher?
This might be a continuation of Mike's question. I don't know. But when you're talking about keiko, it seems like there's a lot of effort involved in keiko. And when you referred to shugyo, you said it's the only thing we decide to do. We decide. It's the only decision we make. The other one deals with conditioning, and shugyo deals with a decision.
Choice.
There you go. So there's effort in keiko. Is there not effort in shugyo?
Well, that's a good question. That's an important question, because it's a kind of a paradox, isn't it? If we don't make any effort to keep one point, to pay attention and be present, then our life becomes a kind of confused messiness with no direction and no clarity and no stability. On the other hand, because of our conditioning, what we identify as making an effort tends to take us in the direction of keiko. Ultimately, let me give you an example. If you can imagine you're holding an apple in your hand there. You're holding the recorder, but imagine you're holding an apple. Now, change to orange. Okay, did you do that? How much effort did that take?
Hardly any.
Almost none. In fact, it seemed really effortless. It was just changing mind. That's the name of the subchapter, changing mind. Keeping one point just means changing mind. There is an art to it, because it's a kind of a shift that comes about through well, for instance, we tend in our Keiko approach to living, in our conditioned sort of way we see things, we tend to think that there's evidence for an outside world, and then there's also evidence for an inner world, an outer kind of reality and an inner reality. If we look closely, there's actually no substantiation of that from anywhere. And so if we look closely at that differentiation that we're making between outside and inside, and where can we look except in our experience, because we are experiencing this distinction, if we look closely at our experience, we'll see that we actually don't know where an experience occurs. And when we when we look that closely, that this shift kind of occurs in us, the shift into chugyo. It's almost like saying, well, if you're sincere, chugyo will begin to happen. Chugyo practice will begin to happen. You know, if you're humble, which means you're not making arrogant assumptions about things, like you think you know what's going on. If you admit that it's a mystery, you don't really know. And you look open-heartedly, you open to this experience right now, there's a shift. And you feel it. You can't identify it. We're calling it shugyo. Okay? But a kind of a shift. And then further you can say, you can ask yourself, who experiences this? And instantly, you'll find another shift, a deeper shift. Because when you look there to see who is experiencing this, you don't see anything. It's not about finding an answer. It's in the looking. It's in the inquiry itself. If you inquire with the idea of finding something that you can define, pin down, intellectually understand, you'll never capture it, because it's infinite. It cannot be captured. You'll miss your mark. Then no matter how strong you're paddling the canoe, if you're going in the wrong direction, it doesn't do any good. So it's not so much how strongly you paddle the canoe, but aiming correctly. It takes 1,000 lifetimes, it takes 1,000 lifetimes. But at each moment, we want to use this practice to hone and clarify our aim in this sense. And this is what I'm talking about when I talk about this shugyo practice, where I'm going more and more deeply in the right direction. And what changes is maybe not that you have some brilliant intellectual explanation for all of this mystery, but that you have a new level of experiencing life. And when we're in this condition, there is no suffering. Suffering happens when we're reacting to the good, the bad, and the ugly. Right? Is that... get there?
Okay. Thank you.
Sensei, I have a book on Japanese armor, and I was curious to see that one of the Japanese word for armor is keiko, and I'm wondering if that's an apt a metaphor that It's the armor, it's the form that you have, but the armor does not, is not the naked life force that goes into this battle or I mean, you could go out in the battlefield without your keiko, but that might not be so good. I'm wondering if that's a good metaphor.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't make too much of that. I think that that's interesting.
It could be a different Japanese character. Not, you know, not the same word at all. It sounds the same.
They might say the same word in English, but it might mean something else altogether. But, yeah, thank you. Interesting. I don't want to... the only thing I'd say about that is I don't want to cast any aspersions on Keiko. I don't want to... It is limited in its scope, but it's essential. Very important. So I guess in a sense, going on the battlefield with your armor or without your armor would be very foolish. So, Keiko. Okay.
Since you mentioned briefly motivation, so you said earlier when you were reading, you said, you know, it's good in the beginning to get on the mat early because that's kind of the rule or that's, you know, what everybody else is doing. But that's a good way to start. But over time, you should, your motivation should change and be different. So I started wondering if there's aspects of training or just life in general where you've realized that your motivation is probably not conducive to what we're trying to practice here, do you stop or do you just continue to bring your awareness to the fact that, oh man, maybe I, you know, my motivation is, you know, trying to accomplish something here or approval seeking, but continue to do that practice, whether it's training here and trying to get really good at arts or as Otomo trying to be a really good, you know, wow, look at him, he's really good, you know, he's always ready for anything. If you realize that there's aspects of, you know, you that this training is feeding those kind of motivations, what do you do about that?
Do you mean that when you discover that you are less than perfect?
Right. Yes.
You know, that's a very good question because everybody suffers in that way. Primarily, secondarily we suffer that way because we compare ourselves to others all the time, which is the biggest mistake just about we can make. The bigger mistake, and primarily, is that we judge ourselves. We judge ourselves because we are all on a campaign to be perfect. Did you know you were on a campaign to be perfect? Everybody wants the pure land. Everybody wants to be pure. And so when we find something that our mother wouldn't like, or our teacher wouldn't like, or just our weird idea about Aikido doesn't support, then we become despondent and depressed. This kind of self-criticism is very unfair. Because you're never going to be perfect. Let me warn you right now. In the Keiko world, you can improve in the sense that you can become more skillful and more effective in terms of your movement, your language, your intellect. But you'll still have pain. Bad things will still happen to you. And good things will still happen to you. And if you're after the becoming a pure Aikido guy, then you're going to hate the bad things and criticize yourself for them. And meanwhile, criticize everybody else too, because you're going to see everybody has them. Oh, those guys, they don't get it. Maybe even try to hide some of those bad things from your teacher or from others or even from yourself because you've prejudged them. And in that effort to judge and put down and avoid the negative, what you see is negative, you rush after the pleasure, the good. Whether it's rank or approbation from other people or polishing the apple with your teacher to get him to think that you're a really good student. All of which is to no avail. I'll tell you a story. There's a farmer who lives out in the country and he has a wife and son and a horse and that's it. And the horse is the power that runs all the equipment. It tills up all the fields. It does everything. One day, the young man, his son, leaves the corral undone and the horse escapes that night. The next day, the neighbors come over and go, oh, to the old man, you poor guy, that stupid kid, he let the horse out, you've lost your horse, what are you going to do now? And he said, well, yeah, we'll see. 2 weeks later, the horse returns with another horse, made friends, brought a wild horse home. And they went, oh, man, you are so lucky. Look at this now. You've got two horses. And he goes, yeah, well, we'll see. Excuse me. And then he asks his son, this is a wild horse. Would you please, train this horse so we can use it to plow and ride and pull the wagon and so forth. Well, the son sets about breaking the horse, and instead of breaking the horse, falls off the horse, breaks his leg. Badly. And the neighbor comes back and goes, oh, you poor man, now that kid's got a broken leg. How are you going to get anything done around here? You are really screwed now. And he goes, yeah, we'll see. A week later, the government comes through the village and conscripts every young man in the village, except his son who has a broken leg. That's the end of the story. But it just goes on and on and on and on. So what that story is expressing is equanimity. Equanimity in a sense is patience. Patience is a common word for equanimity. We have to be patient with ourselves. It's going to go on forever. You have to forgive. It's not about how much you can accomplish in the Keiko world. What it's about is your shugyo experience. That's what counts. When everything falls down around you, you can still say, we'll see. Because you're in shugyo. You're not trapped in the world of self-improvement and getting ahead and being better than anybody else and perfecting yourself in Aikido and becoming the pure Aikido guy. There's no such thing. There's no such thing. Keiko to me is what we do while we're waiting to wake up to Shugyo. And, sometimes the kind of false comparing yourself to other people maybe motivates you to stick around and want to get ahead. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it makes you want to give up and go hide your head in a hole. But it's completely beside the point. That's not what we're doing here. We have all this elaborate practice for everybody to do, because if I didn't do that, nobody would come. I have to have some bait on the hook, So we practice and practice and practice, and let's face it, it's fun, it's good for your body, it's good for your mind, it's a great way to hang out together with a bunch of really great folks. It's a great thing to spend your time doing. But don't think that's all it is, because then you're going to drive yourself crazy. Sooner or later you're going to go, okay, well this doesn't really change anything fundamentally in my life. That's why I wrote the book. Well, that's why I want to express this, how important this is. You know, don't forget now, this Aikido is very young. It started, you know, only a little before the war, World War II, a little bit back there in the 30s, let's say. It was just beginning to form, but it didn't really come full-blown, even from O-sensei until after the war, and after they'd been practicing for some time, maybe in the early 50s when he sent Toi-sensei over here, and Toi-sensei started traveling all over the world. So realize that Toi-sensei also was very young. He was 30 years old when he came here, when Suzuki-sensei met him. Can you imagine? So this was, in our lifetime, has been developed. You know, Buddhism has been developing for 2,500 years. Christianity, 2,000 years. I mean, some of these trainings are ancient. Other martial arts, ancient. This is new. It's been so successful because it's so insightful as a practice. It offers so much. But how it offers that, and how we best proceed in our practice is becoming more and more refined all the time. So it's opening, 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 opening. We value the tradition of it, and we value the teachers that went before us, because without them we couldn't be here doing this. So that's essential. But the wonderful thing about this now and in the years to come, of course it will continue long after I'm gone. It will continue opening and opening and opening. So this is, you have to realize, this is a new teaching every day. It is like that for me, and I want it to be like that for you, for everybody who practices. A little more than you asked, but it's easy to get me going about this, because it's so often misunderstood, even in the world of Aikido. You know, which is understandable, forgivable. I mean, it's very difficult to understand. It's very difficult to see through all of these practices to what is underneath it. And every day, I'm not saying that I do either. Every day, each of us discovers more and more deeply. The more the mystery is revealed for each of us every day. And that's what we're, why we have this, you know, write a book and have this discussion group, and why we come to the dojo and practice together. I know many of you are teachers, and you share this in the same way with your students, you know, and with other people. So that's the process that we're all engaged in together here. This is something we're all doing together. I'm sure you understand this, but you don't in any way want to think that you're coming here to get some kind of information from me or from Tohei Sensei's teachings. You're not here to get information. Tohei Sensei had an experience. He spent his life formulating, developing, expressing ways to help us have that experience. That's all. That's all we're here for. To have that experience, that indefinable experience, and open to it more and more and more deeply throughout our life.
Okay, Sensei, my question refers to it kind of comes out of what you said to Ben. I noticed on page 285, you wrote, In this state, you find what we call equanimity. In that condition, you don't really care whether someone is starving or not, because there are no objects there, there is no other. And then, skipping down a bit, you say, we call this living in a state of dual, non-dual. This is living with passion and equanimity at the same time.
Okay,
and my question, may I...
I know your question.
Yes.
I have to tell you...
Why did you put that in, and where is the place for compassion?
When I was studying this chapter this month, I got to that and thought, I had better take that out. Melly is going to die when she reads that.
Well, I just think it's misleading, because I understand what you're saying about the self and our practice, but when you're looking out at others, I don't understand.
You're right.
Thank you.
You're absolutely right. It is misleading, and it will be ripped from the pages of this book.
Thank you, Sensei.
But I'm really glad to hear that you understood what I was trying to say there anyway. It's not about not caring about others at all. I could have maybe I could just change it to say not falsely caring. But that's so heavily implied from everything that's written around that, that probably when I was writing it, I thought that it would speak for itself. But when I went back and read it to prepare for this class tonight, I did think, oh my goodness, Melly will die when she reads that.
Well, I had underlined it quite a long time ago.
Okay, that was a good question. Thank you very much, everybody.